The federal and territory governments are trying to fast-track two major gas fracking and pipeline projects in the Northern Territory that would further exacerbate climate change while also damaging the air and water. The Arid Lands Environment Centre has slammed the proposal, which will use taxpayer funds to subsidise a planned billion-dollar, 750-kilometre-long gas pipeline in central Australia. To find out about the projects, their effects, and the community campaign against them, I'm speaking to Arid Lands Environment Centre Chief Executive Jimmy Cocking. Welcome, Jimmy.
G'day, thanks for having me.
Okay, firstly, could you tell us broadly about the Arid Lands Environment Centre and its work?
Yep, the Arid Lands Environment Centre is Central Australia's own environmental organisation. We've been in existence for 40 years this year. Unfortunately, with COVID, we didn't get to celebrate our 40th birthday party like we'd wanted. But we've done a lot of work in advocacy, so advocating for national parks like the West MacDonald Ranges and various other parks in the area. We've been involved in anti-nuclear campaigns, whether it's uranium mines or nuclear waste dumps, and working with traditional owners to support their campaigns. We've also been very vocal around climate change action in the Northern Territory, and particularly more recently, the fracking issue is a big one for us. We also do other on-ground work, like we've got a community garden. We're setting up a second community garden here in Alice Springs. We do some fee-for-service work to native landscaping, bush care, and various other sustainability-related projects. So we have to sort of cater to the people of Central Australia, because there's no other environment centre for 1,500 k's. I think the nearest one's in Adelaide or in Darwin.
Given that these aren't the first gas project initiated in the Territory, what has been the history of the Arid Lands Environment Centre in opposing such projects?
Well, the gas industry has been around in the Territory for about 40 years. There's been conventional gas projects and both in the top end and down here in Central Australia. But they're a tight gas in sandstone. It's not the deep, slick water fracking that's being proposed up here at the moment, which is where they drill. It's kind of the one that you hear a lot about in the American experience with shale gas, which films like Gasland and that sort of thing are looking at shale gas, and that's different to the coal seam gas on the East Coast, which has caused a lot of trouble in the northern rivers and through Queensland. But the shale gas, it's deep in a layer, sometimes a couple of kilometres, even more underground, where they drill underground for a couple of kilometres, and then the drill bit turns on a slight angle and then heads on a horizontal through this shale layer. And they can now drill, we met with somebody from Pennsylvania, and they are drilling up to 8 kilometres horizontally underground these days, where then they pump down millions of litres of water, like tens of millions of litres of water, down into the hole with a mixture of chemicals and sand and guar gum to crack open the shale gas layer and allow the gas to flow through. Now, the challenge is that those chemicals stay under the ground, but they also flow back up and they put them into ponds where they evaporate it and also have that risk of spills, and potentially wet season floodwaters can also wash those chemicals into the system. The other challenges are particularly the climate risk. Ultimately, any new fossil fuel developments are contributing to our ever-diminishing climate budget. And the proposals up here, the Beetaloo is looking at, hundreds of millions of tonnes of emissions, which will contribute to global warming, but also the risk of that, the gas through fugitive emissions, is something that can't really be controlled. And that the experience in the United States, you see these big methane clouds over certain states where they have lots of fracking, where methane is 73 times or thereabouts times the power of CO2 as a warming gas. So we need to be conscious of that. Gas is not a transition fuel, and we've been really active in pushing for a renewable-powered recovery and not the gas-led recovery that the federal government's pushing for.
Just back a bit to all that liquid being pumped into the ground. Is that likely to cause any impact on the Great Artesian Basin?
Well, the Great Artesian Basin is south of us here. It only in the Northern Territory, the Great Artesian Basin is really in the bottom corner of the Northern Territory. Further up, there's the Lake Eyre Basin, which the Georgina rivers and others flow into. But further up in the Beetaloo Basin and the MacArthur Basin, they flow down into the part of the Roper catchment up in the top end. So the concern is that there's all those sort of barramundi rivers and places where people like to go out and fish and hunt and all that up in that top end, the potential for the flow down of those chemicals, many of which until recently didn't have to be declared. It was commercial in confidence. Thankfully, the Northern Territory government had a 18-month moratorium. We prefer it would have been a much more extensive moratorium leading to a ban, but they did pause it for 18 months and did a scientific inquiry into hydraulic fracturing called the PEPR inquiry, and 135 recommendations were made as part of that inquiry, which looked at water, looked at climate, and made all these recommendations in terms of how they can reduce the risk of fracking to the environment and to the community. You know, we are involved and have been involved in that process for those 135 recommendations, but our concern is that both the financial situation of the Northern Territory government, but also the push from the federal government for this gas-led recovery, is going to look at fast-tracking fracking and getting a lot of these recommendations to be sort of papered over or not dealt with at all. And that's going to open the territory up to a significant risk associated with this industry.
Now, apart from the exercise in fracking, you've got some pipeline projects proposed as well. Could you talk about those?
Remote Australia, it's a fair way from gas markets. And so for them to transport the proposed gas, there's been talk of pipelines connecting territory gas to both export markets. So there's talk of a pipeline up the middle adjacent to an existing pipeline to take gas from the Beetaloo Basin up to proposed petrochemical plants in Darwin, which are being proposed up there by the likes of Andrew Liveris, who's also one of the PM's task force, manufacturing task force, and here as part of the Territory Economic Recovery Commission, are pushing for these petrochemical plants up in Darwin. So there's a pipeline up that way. There's also a pipeline that's being proposed by Central Petroleum, who operate here and also have licences in Queensland and right down in the Cooper Basin. They're proposing to have a pipeline go from the Mereenie gas field, where they operate, out west of Alice Springs, and heading straight down through the Simpson Desert to connect up to Moomba, which is in South Australia, out near Innamincka. And they want to be able to have quite a large pipe, I think 18-inch pipe, to essentially take fracked gas down to what they always say the East Coast markets. But if it goes to Moomba, it can also head up north to Queensland and go to export through the Gladstone port as well. So there's a big push for pipelines and ultimately getting these on the shopping list for the gas companies so that the government, when they're looking at enabling infrastructure, which is where the government has indicated they would support these sorts of things in terms of helping fast-track pipelines. In this day and age, when we know the impacts of climate change are already here, we know that we can't keep on putting more gas and greenhouse emissions into the atmosphere, that these assets are going to be stranded assets in the long run. And so there's potentially billions of dollars of taxpayer money being potentially wasted from federal government investment in the gas industry instead of what they could be putting that into helping us have a renewable powered recovery and looking at ways of actually aiming for full employment through conservation initiatives and various other ways of looking after the place and creating jobs of care for people rather than supporting a low-job industry, which is the gas industry.
There are a lot of reasons why this shouldn't go ahead. If we look at the various commentators in various sort of areas of society, what has been the opinion of scientists about this project going ahead?
Scientists who recognise the reality of climate change ultimately say that this is just going to be wasted money putting into a gas-led recovery. And of course we were going to get that sort of outcome from a COVID commission that was stacked with gas executives. They were always going to be proposing pipelines and gas projects as a way of propping up what is ultimately a broken market at the moment. And so the scientists are saying that we should be investing in renewables, and this is a once in a generation opportunity for us to actually head in the direction that we need to, rather than reinforcing the excesses and the wasteful elements of our economy at this stage. So yeah, there's a lot of support for a renewable powered recovery and not a gas recovery.
The government seems to be in two minds about renewables and things like gas, because there's a proposal for a massive solar farm north of
Tennant Creek.
Yeah. The government's sort of given that sort of high priority status, yet at the same time they're giving the gas project a similar status.
The Gunner government is having a bet either way. You know, they're betting on both solar and gas at the same time, whereas the federal government is just betting mainly on gas and fossil fuels. And so there is the large Sun Cable project, which will be the largest solar project in the world being proposed up there. It's currently going through the environmental protection authority processes to start looking at putting it together, its plan. Now, that's a big project, and that's going to have impacts of its own. But at the same time, that is the direction we need to be heading. We need to be investing in infrastructure for renewables. The Territory government has got a climate response. They have a policy of emission reduction and having 50% renewable energy by 2030 and having zero net emissions by 2050. However, they haven't really outlined a long-term plan for it, and they haven't legislated for it. We've been calling in the lead-up to the Territory election, which we just had in August, we were calling for, along with our allies in the environment movement, social justice movement and social service sector and unions, calling for a climate act that would legislate these targets and would legislate a pathway for government departments to reduce emissions towards the zero net emissions by 2050, but also that would give some certainty for industry to be able to plan. Currently, I think the NT News just yesterday revealed that they'd had a Freedom of Information request in to the Territory Government in terms of how they were planning on achieving their 50% renewable energy target by 2030. And they received the report back from the FOI with all the pages blacked out apart from the front cover and the back cover. So there are some transparency concerns, and we've ourselves have had it's taken us 3.5 years to get freedom of information about a proposed coal gas project in the Padurka Basin, which is right down on our southern border in South Australia. There's a massive area of coal. I reckon there's 1 billion tonnes of coal under the ground, and we've been pursuing information about that project for 3.5 years, and we've only just got some of that. So we've been assessing that and working through that. But if this pipeline goes through from Marini down to Moomba, there's a big concern from our perspective, and also for South Australians as well, is that there's a potential of 1 billion tonnes of coal being gasified, either underground coal gasification or through coal seam gas, to be put through into that pipeline if it passes through. And I think you've only got one hot springs in the whole of South Australia, and that's Dalhousie Springs out near Oodnadatta. And there's been a federal government report that says that if they do exploit the water resources near that coal body in the Padurka Basin, it will dewater Dalhousie Springs and put that in very important cultural sacred site and your only hot springs at risk.
You've got an ongoing campaign to stop this project, and you've got a list of interest groups across the community, traditional owners, pastoralists and all that. And you want to keep that campaign going. And given that environmental groups usually power along on the smell of an oily rag, you've got a fundraising campaign.
We do. We've got a fundraising campaign called Don't Frack the Outback. We work with communities that are affected by the gas industry, but also we work with other allies in the environmental movement and Indigenous rights movement to First Nations people to campaign against that. So we've got Don't Frack the Outback. We're raising funds at the moment. You can check out on our website, which is www.alec.org.au, and so look for Don't Frack the Outback, or you can Google Don't Frack the Outback and look for our fundraising page through Raisely. We're currently trying to raise $24,000 at the moment so that we can get some key focused resources, get someone on board, and be able to really push this campaign and elevate it over the next little while. Obviously, you know, if we get more than 24, we'd be happy, but we're already in 1 week, we've raised 14,000. We had one donor just call us up and donate 10, which was out of this world. Yeah, we were pretty, dropped on the floor when we heard that. But look, this is an issue that's a national issue. People love the territory, and these projects are not going to just impact on us. They're going to impact on all of us and future generations if all this gas is allowed out, because the climate warming that will occur if the Beetaloo is fully exploited, the impacts of sacred sites if these coal gas projects and water across the place. So, yeah, we're calling out for help. We're on the ground here in Barntwella Springs, and we're working with the people who are directly affected, and we're keen to really make a big difference in this year, because this year is when they're going to be rolling out the drilling rigs very quickly, and we've got to make sure that we have the resources to be able to respond effectively.
So we'll put that web link in our podcast so people can see it. So once again, thanks very much, Jimmy.
Thanks so much for the call, and thanks to your listeners.